Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned. My guest will be Robert Lee. He is the co-founder of Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, and we'll talk more about that organization in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you my weekly recipe, some things going on, and my little report to all of you on the Farm Bill. Last week, we talked a little bit about the Farm Bill, and I wasn't sure exactly where it was at. I know that it had gone through both the Senate and the House, and they were negotiating, and that's where it still is. Farm Bill is in negotiations, but as always, I always talk about us all getting involved and needing to be informed, and the Farm Bill is one of those pieces of legislature that really affects all of us, and yet we all know so little about it. And negotiations are ongoing, and its original intent was to keep the prices for farmers and consumers fair, to provide adequate food supply for all of us, and to protect our natural resources so that they can continue making food. And the proposed Farm Bill is set to cut SNAP benefits, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program that helps so many people who are in need get the food that they need on the table. And the proposed Farm Bill will cut those benefits. It will harm working families, and it's also going to slash support for small scale and sustainable farmers. And those are the kind of farmers that really need the help. The subsidies that you hear about that are in the Farm Bill are subsidizing commodity products, the products that actually go into junk food and make us all fat and sick. So those aren't the end, the ones that are exported and the ones that are used to feed all the animals that we're raising. So right now, unemployment, we know, is, really at a low. I think it's 3.8%, something like that. But food insecure households remains the same as it has been for the past three decades, which is like 1 in 6 people or 18 million people or, 12%. And agriculture, as many of you know, is the second largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. And it's the leading cause of deforestation, water and air pollution, and not to mention our loss of biodiversity in the foods we eat. And, right now, corporate interests, I was at a talk up at Stone Barns, and Anna Lappe was, telling us that there were twice as many lobbyists working for food corporations and biotech companies and things like that than there are congressmen and women in the country. And so you can understand the imbalance that exists right now in the push from corporate interest to support the Farm Bill in a way that does not benefit the 99%. It only benefits the 1%. So while the rich are getting richer, the rest of us are suffering along with the environment. And, I always say if you follow the money, you'll get to the answer. And there's no way we're going to be able to address the hunger problem in this country and protect the environment without dismantling the corporate influence that they have on the Farm Bill. And so what that comes down to, since we don't have the kind of money that all these corporations have, we really all need to get involved and become active citizens. And I always say that, and I always come back to that, because we really do need to get involved. There's just so many problems right now that we're dealing with in the country, from plastic pollution. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the YouTube video of garbage waving wave after wave coming onto the Dominican Republic. I mean, it's no longer, just the little island out in the Southeast Pacific. I mean, it's right here, the Dominican Republic. It was unbelievable. And, they're talking about banning plastic straws in New York City. Well, I want to laugh. I mean, plastic straws, while that's certainly a problem, and we, many people saw the video on YouTube that, of the plastic straw, I guess, in the turtle or whatever. But it's just a drop in the bucket. I mean, plastic straws is just a little bit. I mean, the amount of styrofoam that washes up, and that never disintegrates. We just need to push retailers and corporations to find better packaging. We cannot keep packaging everything in plastic. I mean, I go to Trader Joe's and, you know, they might have some good prices on organic, but meanwhile, everything is in this hard plastic. You know, I get the salad, I get, you know, peppers or cucumbers, whatever. Everything's wrapped in this horrible plastic. Maybe we can go back to brown paper. That would look so nice with a little rope tied around it. But we just need to get away from this plastic. And so we need to all push to try to help make that happen. And it's only going to get better if we all work together. Yeah, there was also an article about the farmers markets not being able to take the SNAP benefits anymore because the company that has been processing the machinery for the ability to take the SNAP benefits is going to stop supporting it. And so actually, because there were so many great articles written about it, there is a nonprofit that stepped in to take over the burden of that for 30 days to extend it and give time for the USDA to find a permanent solution to this. But they need to find a permanent solution because right now the programs like the Fair Food Program that allows farmers to take EBT benefits or SNAP benefits and give many of them, you know, it's like double up your bucks. It's giving twice as much vegetables for the actual cost. Those programs help the farmers and help those people that need those benefits. We need to get healthier food to everybody. And that was one way of doing it. And so this organization that stepped in is a lifesaver, but we really need to get the USDA to find a permanent solution for that. And they're working on it. There's lots of great events coming up. Tonight is the last of the three summer nights at Stone Barns. I mentioned that I saw Anna Lappe 2 weeks ago. It was great. Tonight, Marcia DeLange will be there. She's a senior scientist from the Union of Concerned Scientists. And the Blue Hill Cafe is also open, so you can go early, have some dinner, do a nice tour of the farm. The composting that they do there is amazing. So that's certainly something to check out. And you will not be disappointed. They're just wonderful. And it's only $20, and you can get tickets online. So I hope to see some of you there. Restaurant Week is started this week, New York City Restaurant Week, and it goes until August 17th. So if there's restaurants in New York City that you want to go to, this is a good time to check that out. Oh, this is a great event that I will go to next Tuesday. There's a Granny's Caravan to the border, and it's the organization called Granny's Respond. And I was listening to a great interview with some of the organizers on NPR, and these grannies are on a mission. They are, you know, older women that, and when I say older, I'm one of those women that are coming together to address the separation of children from their parents at the border. And so they're caravanning from across the country to Texas, and they are going to be leaving from New York City on Tuesday, and the rally starts at 11:30, and I will post where it's going to be. When I last checked, it still was not posted as to where the rally was going to be. It was down, I think they had it marked on the map somewhere in Central Park, but I don't know. So I will make sure to post that on my website. But if you check out the website granniesrespond.org, it will certainly be posted there. But wherever it is, I will be there next Tuesday, and I hope to see some of you there. I just love the idea. I wish I could hop on the caravan. I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful takeoff. And August 4th, the Long Island Veg Fest is happening, and that's happening at the Long Island Farm Sanctuary out in Huntington on Saturday, August 4th. August 5th through 10th, there's a seed school, a seed saving school that is taking place at Sterling College, and they're offering a huge discount. I think it's only $250 for a five-day seed school, and you'll learn everything you need to know. And Sterling College is in Vermont, and this is being sponsored by the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance. So you can either go to the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance to find out more, or Sterling College. You can register right there. And there's a code for this discount. You use the code SEED2018 at registration if you want that discount. August 8th, Taste of New York Marketplace at the Long Island Welcome Center. And Chef Tom Shadell, who runs many of the nice restaurants here on Long Island, he will be there doing a presentation and giving out some recipes and sharing some samples. So that's from 7 to 8:30 at the Long Island Welcome Center. And the NOFA Summer Conference is coming up August 10th through the 12th. If you haven't been there before, it's wonderful because it's really a coalition of the NOFAs, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. All the NOFAs come together, Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, New York, everyone comes together for summer conference, where the winter conferences are specific by state. And the, you know, the NOFA New York winter conference is always a wonderful event. But the summer conference is great because it's a collaboration of all the NOFAs. And it's taking place at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, from August 10th to the 12th. And just go to NOFA New York to find out more about it, or wherever, whatever NOFA you want to check out. And that's it. There's lots of events listed on my website, so do check those out. I don't want to take any more time right now to go over them because I want to share with you my recipe. As many of you know, I am intensely working on my first cookbook. People have been asking me about it for so long, and I've been doing this radio show sharing a recipe every week for 8 years now, and so I have a huge amount of recipes that I want to share with you. But the goal of this cookbook is really to empower everybody to be able to take whatever recipe you want and play with it and make it adhere to the diet that you're following, whether you want to be vegan, whether you're going gluten-free, how to adjust a recipe to make it one that everyone can eat. And so this is a vegan vegetable frittata. And it might sound like an oxymoron since a vegetable frittata is made with eggs. But this is substituting out the eggs. And we just did the test run and it came out great. And you would not know that this did not have eggs in it. Okay, so these are the ingredients. And it serves 4 to 6 people. And the prep time was 30 minutes. And the cooking time was about 35 minutes. So 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed that I dissolved in 2 tablespoons of water, and then just set that aside. And then I used 1/2 block of tofu, so that's 8 ounces of firm tofu, 1 cup of coconut milk, juice from 1 can of chickpeas, 1/4 teaspoon turmeric, and 1/8 teaspoon of paprika. If you want to use vegan cheese, you can. I'd say 4 to 8 ounces. I did not use any vegan cheese, but you certainly can if you'd like that. 1 pound of chopped frozen spinach, 3/4 teaspoon salt, 1/4 teaspoon ground white pepper, 3 tablespoons freshly chopped parsley, 1 tablespoon freshly chopped dill, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 1 medium onion, about 1 cup chopped, 1 large potato or 2 small potatoes, 2 large garlic cloves minced, 2 tablespoons white wine, 1 teaspoon dried oregano, 1 cup cherry tomatoes, 1/4 bunch of broccoli florets, which was about 2 cups of florets, and 6 mushrooms that I sliced up. And I preheated the oven to 400 degrees. And like I said, in a small bowl, I dissolved the flaxseed in the water and just set that aside. Then I chopped the onions and cubed the potatoes. And you want to cube the potatoes to about 1/4 inch size. Small, because you want to cook them up. One of my goals in cooking is using one pan, using as many bowls and saucepans and things like that as I can. So I'm chopping the vegetables, cooking the vegetables in one pan, and then putting the eggs right into that so I'm not dirtying 2 pans. So you want to cut the potatoes small enough that they will cook in a reasonable amount of time. And in a medium heat, 12-inch cast iron pan is what I used. I sautéed the onions and potatoes in the 1 tablespoon olive oil until the potatoes are soft. And the 1 tablespoon olive oil isn't really enough. You can either add more olive oil, or what I've been doing is adding water. You can add 2 tablespoons of water at a time while you're sautéing. As the potatoes start to cook, you just add the water, and that deglazes the bottom of the pan, gets all that good flavoring up from the bottom of the pan that's sticking, and continues cooking the potatoes. And you're going to do this until the potatoes start getting soft. And I used a total of 6 tablespoons of water. I added 2 tablespoons at a time for 3 times while I was sautéing the potatoes and onions. And that took approximately 10 minutes. And while those are cooking, I ran the spinach under some hot water to defrost it, and then I drained it and squeezed out all the extra water and just set that aside in a bowl. I drained the tofu, and like I said, 8 ounces was half a cake, so I cut half a cake, and I pressed that between a towel to remove the excess water. And then I put that into the food processor along with the coconut milk and pulsed it until it was fully pureed. Scraped down the sides and the bottom of the food processor as well, and then pulse it again just to make sure that it's all smooth. And then you're going to pour that mixture into a large mixing bowl. And then you're going to use either a blender, a NutriBullet, or a stand-up mixer. I actually use an immersion blender. And I beat the juice from the 1 can of chickpeas. It's also known as aquafaba. And I beat that up until it was thick and frothy. If you keep going, you're going to actually can get soft peaks. But I just did it till it was really very white and frothy and thick. And then I folded that into the tofu and coconut milk mixture in that bowl. And I added in the spices, the salt, the pepper, the chopped parsley, and the dill, along with the turmeric and paprika. And the turmeric and paprika really is just enough to give it a little bit of that orange color to make it look more like eggs, but it's not really so much for the flavoring. So if you don't have turmeric, you can use just more paprika, whatever you'd like. And then, I added the broccoli florets and the sliced mushrooms into the sautéed vegetables. I added the garlic as well and the white wine into the pan and just let that cook for 5 more minutes. I cut the cherry tomatoes all in half and I added those into the pan with the vegetables along with the defrosted spinach. I put in 1/4 teaspoon of salt and the oregano and continued cooking that just till you want to make sure that all the water is evaporated from the vegetables. So just mix those up well so that all the vegetables get all of the flavoring. And then you're going to pour the tofu coconut mixture into the cast iron pan, and you can use a spatula to cover all the vegetables, to spread out the mixture so that all the vegetables are covered. And then you can put it into your 400-degree oven, and you're going to bake it for about 20, 25 minutes, just until it's starting to firm up. And that's the point that you would add the vegan cheese, if you're going to add it or not, whichever you choose to do. But then it's going to cook for another 10 minutes, so that the total cooking time is about 35 minutes. And then you remove it from the oven, and you can cut it into wedges and serve it up just as you would any frittata or omelet. And just remember that the pan's very hot, so I actually put an oven mitt over the handle of the cast iron pan so when it's on the table, nobody grabs the handle and burns themselves. And garnish it with some parsley just to make the colors pop, and it's beautiful. And enjoy it. And let me know how you like it. I love feedback from my recipes. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Robert Lee. As I mentioned before, he is the co-founder of Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, Incorporated, which is a nonprofit food rescue organization operating in 16 cities and headquartered in New York City. And Rescuing Leftover Cuisine provides solutions to prevent excess wholesome cuisine from being wasted by providing services such as food waste consulting, excess food delivery, co-branding services, and tax credit assistance to the organizations that work with them. And Robert is a Gates Millennium Scholar. He graduated cum laude from New York University. And having come from a humble background, Robert's committed to doing all he can to help those in need. And while he was at NYU, he worked with a club called Two Birds, One Stone, and they deliver leftover dining hall food to homeless shelters. And over the 4 years that Robert was part of that organization, he learned some of his best practices that he was able to bring over to this new organization, both in delivering food and fostering relationships with the industry. And he honed his volunteer management skills. And during Robert's 3 years as president of the organization, the organization received the NYU Green Grant Award for the best green initiative on campus. And he led volunteers to deliver over 12,000 pounds of food. And he worked a little bit for J.P. Morgan after graduating before continuing his passion and co-founding Rescuing Leftover Cuisine. Robert, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much for having me.
Ah, my pleasure. Thank you for joining us. So tell us about this wonderful organization you started and a little bit about
the
history.
It's called Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, which is a nice and long, complicated name, but self-explanatory, and, you know, it's easy for people to kind of understand what we do right away. And essentially, we got started about 5 years ago, and, you know, it was basically kind of insane to me that 40% of the food that we were producing in this country was going to waste, and at the same time, all we needed to do was take just 30% of that wasted food and bring it to the people who are food insecure, and it would literally be enough food to eliminate food insecurity. So, you know, just the fact that people are hungry when they really don't need to be, and the real issue is just distribution, it really bothered me, and decided to try and do something about it.
Uh-huh. You know, it must be something that, you know, hits many students at school when you see the kind of food that's being thrown out. Do you have any idea how much food your school is throwing out?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's difficult, right? Because it's at one side you see lots of students kind of throwing away lots of food, you know, because it's kind of an open buffet kind of layout. And then on the other hand, you see, you know, students that are struggling to make ends meet and literally living in a library and, you know, trying to get free food off of events. So it's insane. Even in the college kind of environment, it's, you know, it's a real scenario.
Mm-hmm. And you said 40% of food goes to waste. How much goes to waste because people buy too much or cook too much and throw it out? And how much goes to waste, like, in the field? And maybe you can share, is it different in this country versus around the world?
For sure, yeah. I mean, in developed countries like the U.S., a lot more goes to waste on the consumer side. So after people buy the food, bring it home, they, you know, sometimes over-order or, you know, over-buy and then, you know, forget about it in the fridge. Whereas in developing countries, as your question kind of, you know, very correctly alludes to, a lot of the food waste actually happens on the fields, and in the distribution. So the cold chain infrastructure is not there, in a lot of, kind of developing countries. So the food actually goes to waste along the way. In the U.S., it's, you know, it's even more unfortunate because we do have that infrastructure. We do have all the technology and structure in place to feed everyone. We literally just have to get it to the right people. So that's what Rescuing Leftover Cuisine is trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And so how many pounds of food does 40% of food waste translate into?
90 billion pounds of food every year.
90 billion pounds.
Yeah, it's insane. It's $165 billion problem. And it's just, you know, it's crazy to think about the problem as a whole, because it's, you know, when you think about food, you don't really kind of think about where it's coming from. But unfortunately, we use, and I think you were talking about this a little bit before, in terms of the carbon footprint of agriculture. But, you know, half the U.S. land, 80% of U.S. fresh water, and 10% of the U.S. energy budget is used to actually produce all this food. And then we waste 40% of all of that, when we're wasting 40% of the food that we produce. So it's just a huge, huge problem. But it's not one that's unsolvable.
So can you share with us how the food waste impacts the environmental issue? Because I think many people don't see that. I mean, it's not just the food waste sitting in the landfill. I think, as you just alluded to, it's all the other parts of it. So can you just break
that
down a little bit more for us?
Happy to, yeah. I kind of can rant about this forever, but essentially, you know, when we're thinking about food waste, it happens even before it, you know, kind of lands on our plates, and the environmental impact of food is huge. You know, we use natural resources like land, water, and then obviously all the labor put into creating all that food. And then transporting that also along the way, emitting carbon emissions in trucks. And then once it gets to our plates, all the natural resources used so far, you know, it goes to waste when you're wasting 40% of the food that we produce. So that's the environmental impact, you know, the 50% of the U.S. land, 80% of the U.S. fresh water, 10% of the U.S. energy budget, just 40% of all of those is wasted. That's before it even lands in the landfills. And then when it does, after you throw it out, it goes into the landfill, when it, you know, doesn't get to go through normal processes, it, you know, because it doesn't get to aerate, everything is kind of, you know, compiled on top of each other, it doesn't get to go through aerobic kind of digestion. It goes through the, you know, anaerobic, the, without the actual access to oxygen, and instead it starts to emit methane gases, which are 30 times worse than carbon dioxide. And it's just insane because it didn't have to be this way. So even before, you know, you throw it out, you know, it's already used so much natural resources to get to your plate. And then when you throw it out, it contributes to even more. And that environmental impact, people don't really think about. But if you took the carbon emission impact of just food waste alone and then ranked it as a country, it would rank third right after USA and China. So the carbon emission impact is huge. I mean, if you're someone that is looking to reduce your carbon footprint, you can start by something you do three times a day. You know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can eat all the food, or you can save it and make sure you eat it later on, or you know, give it to someone else who may want to eat it. So that's, you know, I think what we need to start thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would assume rescuing leftover cuisine, you're not rescuing individual portions worth. You're rescuing big portions worth, right?
Well, big portions in the sense that it's anything above like five people's worth. So we like to say that we don't have a minimum pound requirement, but you know, if it is allowed to feed, you know, four people, just fine, four people. So it's like around 5 pounds. But essentially, you know, the way we work is we don't kind of target the individual side of things, mostly because of the regulations and kind of the safety standards that we need to adhere to for food donations. But the way we think about it, we engage lots of volunteers, over 8,000 people on our platform, to really realize that food waste is a problem, and that restaurants and food businesses and, you know, even in our own daily lives, food waste is generated all the time. And by seeing firsthand how much food is being wasted, and then firsthand how much that food is needed at nearby homeless shelters, soup kitchens, food pantries, people start to really put the pieces together and think about food in a different way. Because I think food has become such just a convenient thing for us that it's you know, easy to think of it as just something to do and not really something that takes up so much natural resources and effort and you know, impact on our world.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you have 8,000 volunteers?
Yeah, 8,000 people who have signed up on our web application.
Uh huh. And that's spread out over the 16 cities that you work in?
Correct. Exactly.
Uh huh. Wow, that's a lot of people. And so, do you have, you know, you said the headquarters are in New York, but is it?
That's right.
Is there a separate organization in each of the different cities that you work out of organizing those volunteers, or are those volunteers being organized from New York headquarters?
Yeah, so there's a really great branch head in each of the 16 cities, and the branch heads basically kind of manage the different departments, and as one of the departments is managing the volunteers. So it's definitely not all in New York, but the technology is, you know, kind of maintained and enhanced in New York. So the technology is really what allows us to manage so many volunteers with so little staff, because everything can be automated.
Uh-huh. Can you explain a little bit more to us how that's automated?
Oh, yeah, sure. So the way it works is people, like a food business or restaurant, reaches out to us. You're looking out to donate their excess food at the end of the night. So let's say Starbucks has a lot of pastries that they want to donate at the end of the night, at, say, 9 o'clock when they're closing. We settled the partnership on our side and in on the branches in the kind of departments to figure out where the closest homeless shelter, soup kitchen, food pantry is that needs the food. So we don't want to be giving, these pastry type of food that might be better for breakfast to someone or organization that doesn't provide breakfast. And then we essentially make that match. We, kind of get all the okays from all the parties involved. And then we basically put it up on the web application. And the way it works is anyone in the general public can sign up online on rescuingleftforcuisine.org and take a look at our calendar that has all the different opportunities for people to be involved in food rescue. And when they see an opportunity that they like, let's say they're, in a specific location and they're free after 5 o'clock after work, they can just choose the 5:30 pickup at, 5 minutes away from their workplace or something. And then when they sign up online, they get an automated confirmation email that has all the instructions of where to go, who to meet, and, how to, do the process. So that's pretty much
it. So whoever picks it up is also the delivery person.
Sorry, Daniel?
If you pick it up, I'm saying whoever picks it up from, let's say, the Starbucks, they're also the delivery person taking it to the food pantry, correct?
Exactly.
So there's no middle person. There's no, headquarters where it's being brought.
All of our pickups are done on a direct basis. And the reason why we do that is so that we can ensure that the food is as safe and as fresh as possible. Because once you add a layer of kind of storing the food in a third-party location, it's difficult to, manage all the inventory, one. But two, ensure that, all the costs are covered. So for us, we just make it direct from the restaurant to the homeless shelter so that the homeless shelter feels comfortable that literally came directly from the restaurant and that the food is really fresh, really safe, and can be served immediately.
Mm-hmm. And is Rescuing Leftover Cuisine a nonprofit?
Yes, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
You are, uh-huh. So you can take donations, et cetera, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Great. Let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I actually want to know how you get your funding and how people can sign up and things like that. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Robert Lee from Rescuing Leftover Cuisine. Be right back.
Have you ever noticed how pathetic the mainstream news is and how it's biased, vague, and utterly devoid of any objectivity? Do you or anyone you know still believe America is a democracy? Well, I insist you tune into the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti right here on PRN every Friday at 4 o'clock. I'll explain how things truly are, like America is a veiled plutocracy, and I'll show you the evidence is everywhere. Once we remove the program bias and deception, our news outlets convey the scripted narrative of the deep state while distracting and dividing us. It's time to break the dichotomy of division so we can finally unite and remove these sociopathic plutocrats from power. Join me on the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm here live on PRN every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. My show, The Turning Point, is a blend of autobiographical storytelling, political and cultural commentary, and lively, intelligent interviews. I hear you asking, Mike, how can I stay sane in the age of Trump? No problem. Just listen to my show. It's all natural, gluten-free, and just plain good radio. That's Mike Fader with The Turning Point every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on PRN.FM.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm talking today with Robert Lee from Rescuing Leftover Cuisine. Robert, you with me?
Yes. How are you?
Great. So I was curious as to how Rescuing Leftover Cuisine gets funding. Do you go out for grants or donations? How does that work?
So we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means, you know, we do rely on donations to continue to grow and operate. But we also do have our earned revenue stream, because the way we operate, obviously we do, pick up food from food donor partners, but we also provide a service because a lot of food rescue organizations unfortunately have a minimum power requirement where they just won't go buy for food donations below about 100 pounds of food. And we uniquely kind of fill that niche market by using this web application technology, using volunteers to kind of accommodate that need. And through the process, we also help with kind of helping these food donors and these food companies get an enhanced tax deduction. It's quite rare for people to kind of know this, but the IRS code actually allows for food donations to be deducted 50% more than what you would normally deduct as a general cost of doing business. So, you know, if you're a food business and you're throwing out, let's say, $100 worth of food, you can just normally just write that off $100 and, you know, say it's cost of doing business. But if you're donating that food, $100 worth, you can actually write off on your taxes $100, $150. And that extra $50 is money in their pockets. That's money they don't have to pay in taxes, all that stuff. And so we actually capture a small amount of that value so that we can continue to grow organically, sustain our operations, and things like that. So we are obviously very heavily dependent on individual donations, but we do have this earned revenue stream that continues to allow us to grow organically and ensure that we're also recession-proof.
Uh-huh. So the organizations that are donating get the tax reduction because they can write it off as a donation.
That's right.
Uh-huh. That's great. A win-win for everybody, right?
Exactly.
And why can't they just write it off? What service do you provide just by showing them how to do that? Is that it, that they don't know how to do that?
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, to get the enhanced tax deduction, you need to show that you did donate it. There's like a set of requirements, including that you donated to a 501c3 nonprofit, that it was not, you know, used for anything other than to feed hungry people, all that stuff. So we provide that proof and that documentation so that it can easily be, backed and submitted. We do also help with just, you know, pointing out that, you know, these are the certain forms you need to fill out, all this stuff. But, that's kind of a additional kind of service that we provide.
Right. And how are you different from other organizations like City Harvest, or have you heard of Food Recovery Network?
Yes. Yeah.
I interviewed Ben Simon years ago when he first was in college, and he started doing the Food Recovery Network, which sounds very similar, but I don't know if he had that other, revenue stream.
Yeah, I think, I believe he now is at Imperfect Produce.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing also. But anyways, yeah, so in terms of City Harvest, I mean, we are also headquartered here in New York, as well as City Harvest. And we got started 5 years ago specifically because City Harvest had a minimum pound requirement. And, you know, there were a lot of restaurants that we were interviewing that wanted to donate food to both, you know, City Harvest as well as other organizations that exist in New York. And they just couldn't find an outlet that would accept their food because they were smaller amounts of pounds. So we specifically got started to fill in the gaps. And so we have a pretty good relationship with Food Bank as well as City Harvest in terms of just passing off partners to each other. So if there's, you know, partners that are way too big for us that, you know, obviously our volunteers with, you know, sedans and cars can't pick up, you know, Food Bank with their large truck can go ahead and pick that up. So, you know, we operate in that niche area, and we also use a web application to do that. And because of that web application, we're much more scalable, which allows us to operate in 16 cities, whereas City Harvest is just in New York. And so there's obviously there's a lot of other reasons like that, but those are the three main differences. And in terms of Food Recovery Network, they're also really, really great, doing a lot of amazing work as well as City Harvest, of course. But the Food Recovery Network focuses specifically on college campuses, and we work with for-profit food businesses like restaurants, catering companies, there's all different kinds of cafeterias and, you know, offices that cater food and things like that. So the Food Recovery Network engages college students to bring college campus dining hall food to homeless shelters nearby, which is also a huge area of need as well, of course. So every organization has kind of, a complementary, specific area that, they're making really great impact in. So.
Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
We all meet together.
And is there any type of vetting process? Like, is there any type of quality control as far as what foods you're willing to donate? I mean, like, will you pick up from McDonald's?
Yeah, that's funny because we've been in growth mode for the past year, and, you know, we're aggressively bringing on new food donor partners. So definitely, you know, if anyone has any, you know, connections into a food business, definitely let us know. But in terms of, you know, the specific types of food, we're trying to be as objective as possible on that front, but we have been approached by, for example, Burger King location, and unfortunately we just could not find a homeless shelter, soup kitchen, or food pantry that was willing to accept that type of food. So, yes, we do, try to match everyone. But unfortunately, you know, obviously with the health concerns and all that stuff, we do want to be conscious of, you know, not pushing food to people that don't want it, right? So, you know, we are, in our specific outreach, specifically targeting healthy food chains, because there's plenty of them, especially, you know, in New York and, you know, across the nation that are still not participating. So we want to start, you know, if there's 40% of food going to waste and one-third of it is needed to eliminate food insecurity, then why not focus on the one-third that is the healthy, fresh, food? So that's our perspective.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Wow. What was I just thinking of? How can people get involved if they want to volunteer and participate? How do they go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, we got started 5 years ago because of our simple philosophy that literally every little bit counts. And just because a restaurant or a food business has below 100 pounds of food doesn't mean that food can't feed anyone. And in fact, it's actually, you know, really important for small homeless shelters and soup kitchens that can't accept the truckload, right? And, you know, that philosophy of every little bit counts applies across the board to volunteering, to donating, to everything, right? So the ways people can get involved in this are simple. You can go on to rescuinglifecuisine.org/calendar and find a 30-minute volunteer activity. Again, 30 minutes, really, really short, small amount of time. But that small amount of time is huge and has a huge impact, as you'll see when you volunteer. But essentially, that's number one. And number two is if you don't have the time and maybe then you have the resources, you can donate any amount. And that, again, any amount goes a long way because of our earned revenue stream. Any incremental amount of donation we do get goes directly into our growth. And that is compounding impact, right? You donate $10 today, it's not just going to feed 100 people, which is what our conversion rate is, 100 people fed for every $10 you donate. It's going to allow us to grow a new route that will continue to grow so that that $10 basically allows us to not just feed 100 pounds, but 100 pounds, you know, every month going forward. So essentially, you know, those are two main ways you can help. But if you have other ways, for example, introducing us to food businesses or volunteer groups or just anything that you think would be helpful, feel free to definitely reach out to us at info@rescuinglifecuisine.org.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, I was reading an article just this week, actually, about food waste for collecting leftover food and feeding it to pigs in the UK. Did you see that article?
I have not, but I heard about something similar in Vegas.
Because, I mean, maybe the Burger King food can go to feed pigs.
Yeah, why not, right? I mean, it's better than going to
I mean, right now it's better than giving them, yeah. I mean, actually it's probably not better than giving them the soy. It's probably the same, you know, equally bad. But, you know, to all those pigs, you know, animals that are getting fed, you know, crappy GMO food, you know, you might as well give them some food, wasted food that, that's going to go bad otherwise.
I think it's a great idea. I think there's so much potential in the food waste space. I think it's, you know, just starting to get lots of attention and it's just starting to get lots of new ideas coming into the space. So, yeah, I love that idea and it's definitely, you know, it's better than what's happening now. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any organizations that are recipients of food that are particular? I mean, I know you said you couldn't find anyone to take Burger King, which I think is hysterical. I think that's a great testament to
We do work with you know, specific types of homeless shelters, soup kitchens that have dietary restrictions. Just for example, we work with one that is servicing specifically people over the age of 60. Who either just had like a, you know, health issue that unfortunately either didn't have insurance at that time or something happened and they just couldn't meet the bills and ended up in this unfortunate circumstance. With that, obviously, they have a lot of dietary restrictions of what they can eat and what they can't eat. And, you know, thankfully, we've been able to kind of match really great healthy food from places like Dig In and Inde and that kind of stuff to those locations. So yeah, those circumstances do exist. And you know, we just have to make sure that we are mindful of that and working towards, you know, matching it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. And what do you have suggestions for people at home, ways that they can cut back on their food waste?
Yes. My number one thing is, never shop when you're hungry. Or never even, you know, when you're super, super hungry. So, like, when I go to a grocery store and, you know, sometimes I go after work and I'm, like, super hungry, I tend to, like, overbuy just because I'm like, oh, my God, I can definitely go through this. but it's
right this minute I could go through this, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's just a matter of making sure that you don't overbuy. So that's number one that I always, you know, the tip that I always give in terms of making sure that you're just from the get-go not overbuying. And then number two is just making a plan and organizing your fridge. And I think a lot of people don't really think about the fridge in the right way in terms of, like, you know, something that needs to be organized. But It is. It's you think of it as like a storage unit, right? Like you want to, you know, organize it in a way that makes sense to you and allows you to use it, use all the stuff in there in the right way and all that stuff. So those are my two tips that people can definitely do. Obviously. Mm-hmm.
I also recommend the freezer. You know, people underutilize the freezer, I think.
Exactly.
But like I made a casserole yesterday. I had a cooking class and I made big vegan moussaka. And I thought I was having people company here tonight that would eat it. And turns out the plan has changed and we're now going out to eat. So it's like, okay, when's the next time that we can eat this? So I either can, you know, give it away or Sunday I'm having people that, and, but if I wait till Sunday, it's not going to be fresh. So I'm just taking the whole thing, sticking it into the freezer just for a couple of days and then I'll pull it out and it will be fresh, you know, or fresher.
And I think it's, you know, you have to make sure you think consciously about that, because I think most people are just like lazy and they're just like, ah, whatever, we'll just leave it in there.
Definitely. But the freezer is great. You just have to remember to then go into it to take things out, you know, because, you know, I'll have things in there from like, you know, last year and it's like, I don't know. And yet it's amazing. Even when you think, oh, well, it's been there too long. Usually it's still fine. If you haven't lost power or anything, it really holds quite well. And so I think the freezer is underutilized in our society a lot.
For sure. And it's a powerful tool.
Right, for leftovers. I mean, people use the freezer to buy frozen food to start with, but when you have food that you think you just might not be able to eat the leftovers in time. And there was also, I had heard about an organization that has, I guess, an online profile similar to yours, except it's matching just people, individuals up with other individuals. Like, I can't use this food tonight. I have, you know, lasagna for two left over, and they match somebody up with who wants lasagna, and, you know, and it's kind of a sharing program like that. Do you know about that?
No, I just heard about this.
Yeah. I'll find out the name of that organization and share it with everybody next week. But that was really cool, too. It certainly works well in cities. I think in the suburbs it might be a little harder because people have to drive. But if you're in the city, you could be within a few blocks away from someone who has food, you know, one apartment building over that you could use. And then the next time you can give them the food, you know. So, you know, that's one thing with the Internet. It's making some of these creative possibilities, creative problem solving, available and accessible to people. You know, there's certainly Ample Harvest. I don't know if you've heard of Ample Harvest.
Right?
A wonderful organization. If you grow too much food in your garden, you know, go to ampleharvest.org and you can donate your leftover cucumbers, zucchini. Because, I mean, as a gardener, I know, you know, I have everything harvested at one time and, you know, I have a lot of volunteers that work with me in my garden, so I can give it away to them. But otherwise, you don't want it to go to waste, you know. The last thing you want is organic, fresh, delicious cucumbers rotting in the refrigerator.
Yeah,
so that's really a wonderful thing. And do you go outside of the city? I know you're in 16 cities, but, like, do you service Long Island, for instance?
We do not yet. So, I mean, hopefully as we grow and, you know, have more interest in Long Island, we'll, you know, create a branch there, but not yet, no.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would think that would make sense because actually on the island or, you know, outside in the suburbs, more people have cars. I would think it's actually more challenging to find volunteers in the city that have cars that are able to do this, no?
Right, yeah. I think the model lends itself to any place really, because it's basically the same thing, but, you know, there'll be more people with cars that are already in cars. So why not, you know, drive, you know, maybe 5 minutes away from, you know, work to pick up some food and drive it along the way home to a nearby shelter or something. So it's definitely doable.
Yeah, I know. I have a whole list in Long Island that I actually worked up with my local synagogue, and, you know, after every bar mitzvah, everyone who's planning a bar mitzvah or a wedding, they're given a list of places where they can donate the leftovers to. And people are always calling me to, like, come pick it up and bring it over to, you know, we have a place called Mama's House, which is, you know, for unwed moms, young girls. And, you know, I love bringing the food and leftovers there. But, you know, in every neighborhood, whether you can connect with an organization like yours or not, we want to keep leftover food out of landfills because it's just, you know, a stupid idea. And it makes so much sense to get it to people that need. So, Robert, thank you so much for the work you're doing. Can you just share one more time? We're just about out of time. But share with everyone one more time how they can get in touch with you, how they can sign up to volunteer. And
yes, of course.
Yeah, great.
You can sign up online at rescuingleftovercuisine.org. And on the upper right-hand corner, you can just register as a volunteer and take a look at our slots on the calendar.
Mm-hmm. And one last question. Can you donate food if you're only going to have food on occasion? Like, I'm a caterer, you know, so I might have food, you know, maybe once a month, but not on a regular basis.
Yes, definitely, 100%. And you can do the same on our website.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great business you're doing. Thank you so much for thinking about it and saving that food. And everybody out there, thank you for joining us. It's been wonderful having you, and I'll see you all again next week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Bye for now. I'm not afraid.